Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Lots and lots and lots to get to, and only some of it relating to that. I don't even know what the word I would use for what happened down at Tim Hortons Field last night. Well, we'll come up with a word before the show is over. They're already coming in. Here we go. Ken is in first. Oh, let me hold on before we get going. I'll tell you what Ken said in a second. Let me bring in Mike Fortune, host of the Hamilton Network on Cable 14. Guy, we love having on the show. It's been a while since you've been in here. You said it's the first time in here in studio since before COVID.
Just before COVID, yeah. I think it was December 2019. And nice to be back. Gonna be on. Normally, when I'm doing the show the last few years, I'm in shorts and sweatpants and hair isn't done and all that.
Yeah, as long as you're wearing something.
But yeah, that was pretty bad last night. I'm curious to hear what Ken had to say regarding that debacle of a game last night.
So I got to tell you, Ken comes out of the blocks today, and Ken is clearly a tired, fed up Ticat fan because he has gone for the lowest blow possible.
Are we doing a mic drop right off
the word here? You're looking for, he writes, for the Ticat game is typical.
Typical.
You know, that's true this year.
Seems like that's true for many years lately.
Uh-huh.
I know we had a couple decent years in there, but
Patrick has fascinating as his choice.
Fascinating.
Let's see here. I don't know who this one is. Someone just says cluster and thankfully left the second word
off. Well, we know what the second word is. I would say something like Edmonton Eskimish. You know, like they've sunk to the Edmonton Eskimo.
Elkian. Doug says expected. Okay. Oh, man. The people are...
So there's people that...
Are coming out cold today.
Cold?
I mean, hot but cold.
Just, you know, we're used to this. It's Hamilton. Guess what? This is another law. You know, I got a chuckle last night. I was watching the pregame. I watched up until the monsoon
turned. Yep.
Coach O, good dude. Great dude. He's wearing a T-shirt, and he's talking to Milanovic and all the other coaches. And he's on the back of his shirt. It says, practice like a champion. And then in the word practice, ACT is highlighted. So it's practice like a champion, act like a champion.
Yeah, I like that.
I like it, but you're not putting that to good
use. You're not.
That's not the phrase how you would describe this team anymore.
And I'll be fair, I'm not down for practice. Steve Milton from The Spectator is down there. He does that. I'm not down to watch every day at practice. They may be practicing like champions, but they are not playing anything like it.
And they don't act like it on the field with the misconducts and the penalties and just the bonehead moves that you constantly see.
Here's one by, I don't know who this is from. It doesn't give a name. I don't even know if I'm allowed to... It's F-ugly. You can put it together. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, so I'll let you just do the wording yourself.
Yep.
From Ken. I bet on Edmonton last night. I had faith in Hamilton losing, unfortunately. Yeah. It's you know what? I still love them, though. Oski wee-wee, someone says.
Well, okay, you know, once you're a Ticat, we're Ticat fans at heart. We're tired. We're frustrated. This is typical, like Ken let off this
with. Another word I would describe, I had to go today for my, I'm supposed to do it every 6 months, but I don't because I hate it, for my annual dental visit.
Oh, yes.
Where my hygienist treated me to the part of life I love so much when she takes these sharp metal objects and rams them into my fleshy gums.
Yeah.
And then says, you know, you're bleeding. Really? Really?
Shocking.
Yeah, really.
And meanwhile, while they're doing that, they want to have a full conversation with you as well.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, uh-huh.
But yeah. I've always thought it was funny that my gums are bleeding. And yeah, you know what? I mean, I brush every day, to a couple times a day at least, and I floss regularly. And, you know, when you take a stabby thing.
Sharp metal object.
And you put it into flesh. Yes, I'm sorry. Has a hygienist ever... not had someone bleed? I should ask that question of them sometime. If you're a hygienist, have you ever not had someone bleed when you... And she had another special device today. It was an electric scaler or something.
Oh, yeah. That's a new thing out now. Yeah, okay, I had that done.
But this thing, it feels like she is shooting me with a laser. And when I flinched a couple times, she goes, oh, would you like me to turn it down? And I'm like... You mean it can do the same job without being like this? Yes. Why did you turn it up in the first place?
Turn it down.
Turn it up.
Start slow, work your way up. Don't go high and come down. Come on, folks. Bedside manner is a little.
No, she was lovely.
She was. She's lovely.
She was a lovely woman. She had great, great. Okay. Well, not bedside. Great. Dental chair manner, and I would happily sit down and have a chat with her for whatever. She was a lovely person.
She was just digging deep for all that stuff hidden deep down.
And here's the other thing. Like, I don't necessarily want her to come on and talk about my teeth. I don't know what she would say, but I don't know anybody who enjoys going to the dentist. I don't. And it's not, dentists can be lovely people. Is there anyone who says, it's my dentist appointment today, I can't wait?
Don't know of anyone that's ever done
that. I've never heard that.
I thought I heard an ad today on another station. I think I heard it correctly, where no matter what your age, what your state is, if you're afraid of coming to the dentist, it's okay. We'll look after you. They'll put you under no matter what, if that's what you want. Maybe that's what we got to do with you, Scotty. Did we have to pull and drag you as a kid to the dentist?
I refuse to talk about that because we do not acknowledge there are other stations.
Fair enough. Sorry. It probably was this one. How about that? It probably was this one.
So, who may not be communicating for a while as of Monday would be City of Hamilton employees. How's that for a segue? Because we are facing the possibility of a strike with 3,500, I think, was the number, give or take.
3,500, something in there. Big number. And crucial services, too. Garbage pickup, daycare, rec centers.
So, look, I think we look at these services and we say they're important. And I think most of us look at people that do work around the city or wherever else and say, they deserve a raise.
Of course they do.
But they do. Has the city made a catastrophic mistake here? Because the union leadership, you did it on this show, has made it very clear that they saw what the city gave the non-union workers on July the 1st, raises of up to 15%.
Yep.
Over the span of this year, they're up 15%. Knowing there was negotiations going on with your union, was this a catastrophic mistake to do this now?
Optics sure don't look good, do they? Listen, I don't know the financial goings on behind the scenes of City Hall and how things are and aren't done, but if I was a employee working the front lines, having to deal with everything that I have to deal with, I'm not begrudging people for getting raises. They're going to take it. I don't know how you kind of look at this and say this is a good idea right now, team, whether it be the city manager, whether it be the senior management team. I don't know how they look at this and say, let's make everyone feel good and give them all huge pay raises. And
I know the city has said, and they said it on this station, that many of the people who got 15% of the non-union mm-hmm. were the lower paid workers.
So they're getting them up to par or closer to.
But keep this in mind. Of the 1,100 workers who got raises of some degree back in January or July, the median income is $106,000. You can explain that it was the lower paid workers. Optically, for all public consumption, you're talking about people who are paid very well, getting nice raises. You had to know, and the union has not hidden from this.
Yep.
You had to know the union was going to say, there's money for them, there's money for us. It was, to me, unless, and I haven't found this yet, and I can't find anything that would suggest this, if it is, we'll explain this next week. Unless there was something that said by mandate, you had to do it on a certain date. This just looks like you're costing the taxpayers a lot more money.
Well, you're costing the taxpayers a lot more money, and you're costing the constituents as well a lot of grief and anxiety over the next little while if this does not get cleared up before Monday. Or I guess is it tonight at midnight?
Sunday night at midnight.
It's Sunday at midnight. It's putting a lot of people in a very precarious situation, and it's a real shame. But again, I don't know why everyone is completely shocked through the city of Hamilton. We've seen these types of moves countless times, and I do believe other municipalities might also be in this position. We're hyper-focused on this great city. The decisions were made, and now we'll have to feel the effects of whatever they might be.
Let me tell you what the effects are. And if you were listening earlier this week, these numbers may be familiar to you because I read them earlier in the week. 11 years ago, the city of Hamilton paid $629 million to its employees for salary and benefits. $629 million.
How many years ago again?
11.
11, okay.
$629 million. Next year, we'll be over a billion. In 12 years, we will have gone up by 33% in salaries and benefits. And each time you give an increase, it's, let's say, 3% increase. 3% of $629 million mm-hmm. is a lot less than a 3% increase of a billion. Every time you give these increases, the amount the increase costs the taxpayers goes up considerably more. We are getting to a point, I hate to say this to the workers in the city, because I do believe you deserve an increase.
I do too.
We are getting to the point where it's unaffordable for the people of this city. We can't keep giving huge increases to people. We just can't. I'm sorry.
And now, whether these are negotiated in the contracts, again, you and I don't know.
Well,
that
it will be.
It will be. But we don't know the dates and all that stuff. So, yeah, again, I never begrudge people of getting raises and making as much as they can. But when you are in a situation like we are in this municipality with so many other things on the go, was this really the right time to talk about this and get it out there? But like everything, you get it out now. 3 years from now, there's going to be a new election. People might forget about it, and you go on your merry way. And I'd also like to know how much waste there is. Like how many of these 3,300 employees, or sorry, at the senior level, I should say, or within City Hall, you know, is there a lot of, you know, there's three people doing one person's job and so on and so forth. There's probably a lot that can be axed there too, potentially.
The frustration for me with some public service jobs, some, and frankly, some private service jobs too, private industry, but is that the many people in the private sector have either lost jobs, lost hours, or have to do more with less now. They have to do more hours. There's not as many people in their businesses. The city hasn't lost maybe a handful of people, but the city has not gone down mm-hmm. in people. At some point, surely the same has to apply to public sector, not just City of Hamilton, provincial, federal. Everyone has to do a little more with less. We have to, no, I don't want anyone fired. I've said this a million times. I don't want anyone fired. Mm-hmm. But when someone retires or leaves to go to some other job,
does it need to be filled right away?
You don't need to necessarily fill it. And what I want to see from our city council, which we never see, in my experience, we never see. We always have things we want to spend more on. Where is the effort to sit down if you're a counselor and say, you know what, I've got this project I want to do, but I know that's going to put a burden on the taxpayer. Before I bring this project forward, I'm going to bring forward an area that I think we can get rid of that may have run its course or that's not as important. I will find the savings to cover the thing that I want to do. But nobody does that. They just bring the thing we want to spend more money on.
When it comes to municipal politics, I don't think that comes into anyone's mindset when they're looking at what needs to be done. Let's put something bright and shiny and new that's possibly needed as well. And let's put that on my little clipboard and let people know that's what
I did.
I didn't save you any money, but boy, look at all the great stuff I gave you.
Let me ask you a question, Mike. We've got to go to a break. Okay. Let me ask you a question. You have been into many, many hockey arenas, public facilities in the city, community centers, whatever else. In the front door, there's always or usually a mm-hmm. bronze plaque with this building was dedicated and it has the name of the counselor yep. from the ward and the mayor and everything else. How many bronze plaques do you see at bridge reconstruction sites or pothole filling centers? There's nothing. Politicians love cutting ribbons and getting their names on those bronze plaques. They don't love doing the other stuff. Let's stop until we fix the stuff we have before we add new stuff that we, but it all goes to the same thing. We love, not we,
they.
City Council, they love to spend money. They don't love to cut spending. They don't. And because everything is crucial. You cut this, people die. Well,
people are going to be very upset when you cut their services. I get it. And that's the toughest part of being a politician is making those very tough decisions. And I don't think anyone's really truly at this point stepped up this term. I could be wrong.
We've been told publicly by a number of counselors, we are looking at a tax increase next year of over 10%.
Yeah.
If there are not a series of counselors that stand up and say, I tell you what, we may have some things we have to spend on, but I am going to make it my mission to find 3 or 4% in the budget that we can cut, even if they're voted down, even if the rest of council vote, if we don't have somebody stand up, this council is a complete in abdication of their duty. Someone has to start finding ways to save some money as opposed to just adding.
Well, it starts with the leadership, and then it starts with each individual councillor taking a deep dive.
But someone.
They're already starting to look for votes for next term, guaranteed.
If you're a councillor listening, and I know they do, lead. Be the leader in this. Bring forward some ideas, and you may not get it passed. But at least show that somebody on council
is
willing to actually cut some things. And I don't mean we're going to cut our lunches and it save $50. All right, that's a nice gesture that shows something, but that's not cut some things that we don't need anymore and that make a difference. Mike, I was blown away a few days ago when I was presented with a number. I was reading a piece in The Hub, which is a great website. You can read opinions and debates and things like that. You don't always agree with them, but it's a good website for people to check out, thehub.ca. Anyway, do you know how many foreign students within 50,000, how many foreign students did Canada have come to this country to study in 2022?
1.1 million.
A little high, but you're... So 800,000. We had 800,000. So there are 40 million people in Canada. 1/40 almost, give or take, were foreign students. And a lot of people are now pointing out, with all the problem we have with housing, especially with rental units, we don't have any rental units... Is it time for the government, the federal government, to say, we can't take this, because these are people who are probably not going to buy a property when they're here. They're coming temporarily. They're going to rent. So that's a drag on the, or a boom, I don't know what you want to put it, but on the rental market. But it takes a lot of those units. It fills a lot of those units. Is it time for the federal government to say, you know what, immigration is... There's lots of people questioning that because of housing. We can't necessarily deal with it. Is it time generally for the government to say we have to slow the border flow down a bit? Not stop it, not be anti-immigrant, just say this is at a pace that we just can't keep up with at this time.
Yes, I do agree with that. And I've always been a believer in look after your own backyard first, and I don't think we as a country have been doing that lately. I have no problem helping people out and having people have a second opportunity, a chance here to tell students to no longer, or they can't apply and come to our universities here in Canada. I don't agree with that, because I think these are youngsters. They want to try and get the best education and the best place possible. I'm fine with that. But in regards to the immigration status, and I do think it is time we pump the brakes a little bit. You just have to take a drive down Barton Street, down City Hall, just in our city alone, and you'll see what's going on in this city. And it's not going to get any better. And yet you and I, we're all kind of going to be paying into this. And then it affects us as well. Let's face it. The Fortune household budget, we're pinched a little bit. I don't know if the Radley household is, but we're all feeling it. So for the government to say, look, we've really done our part as a nation. I think we've done a super job wearing this flag and letting people know, come to Canada, it's a safe place. But maybe now is the time, yes, Scott, that we take a little bit of a break.
I don't know how... First of all, it's very clear, and this is not an anti-immigrant screed.
No, not at all.
But I don't know how anyone can look at the numbers of people that are coming, over a million people last year, and look at the number of housing units that are being built, knowing we already have a problem, and not say, we can't keep up with this.
Yeah.
And the worst part to me is not even the thing facing Canadians. That is very challenging for sure. But let's say that I am someone who is coming to Canada from some other country. I've decided to come here for a better life.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is not compassion to allow someone to come to this country when you are absolutely guaranteeing that you've set them up to fail.
Yeah.
When you say, come here for a better life, and then we don't have a place for you to live, we don't have a standard of living that for many people, some come with money, but for many people who are seeking escape from difficult times, when you have a standard of living that you can't possibly keep up with, that we don't have medical, to me, this is not compassion when you are setting people up for failure. And now they're stuck here because for many people, again, not all, but for many people, I've met a number of them, they've spent their life savings to get here.
To get here, now they have nothing left.
They don't have a bunch of money to go back home when they realize they're stuck here.
And I know times are different, and I had a conversation about this with my buddy just a few hours ago about, you know, we're into this cancel culture and what we can and can't do and can and can't say. And back in the day, times were so much different when newcomers came to Canada. They were vetted. They had to make sure that their health was in order. Did you have, whether it was a sponsor or did you have something lined up at least? Listen, I can't imagine what it is like to live in those war-torn countries. I can't imagine it. But the fact that we just open up our doors and just say, everyone, come on in, it's to the point now where we as a nation can't handle
there's
that
two.
Anymore.
There's two different ways. There's three, I guess, because there's the foreign student thing. But there's people who come here as economic immigrants. They are coming, moving to the country. They're bringing their skills. They're bringing their abilities.
And that's great.
And that's how this country was built, quite honestly.
Exactly.
And then there are people who we take in as humanitarian immigrants because mm-hmm. their country is at war. They're going to be killed, whatever else. All of those things have tremendous value. All of those things I support. And all of those things I think we need to continue to do. The problem is I don't know that we're helping anybody when we do it on such a scale that we are, as I said, leaving you in a position when you arrive here that there's a very good chance you're not going to succeed. That doesn't seem to me to be compassionate.
And it doesn't seem to be fair. And, you know, we bring a lot of these individuals here into Canada during a nice spring, summer season, if you will. Well, things are going to get harsh pretty soon, and it's a different state out there in the wintertime. And again, you look at all of these wonderful agencies and not-for-profits that are out there. But what's the one thing we hear from all of them? They're strained. They're tapped out. They need more resources. They need more funding.
I've never talked to someone who works, and it may happen, but I've never talked to someone who works at one of these amazing agencies who says, can you find us some people? We're so flush with cash that I can't spend it fast enough.
Yeah.
I've got five homes sitting empty that we're trying to fill. Can you find me someone who can move here? I've never, ever, ever, ever heard that. If anyone has ever heard someone say that, let us know. I don't think that's ever been said.
Between the two of us, we've probably done 1,000 interviews, and I've never run into that boat either. And I know we're making a little light of it right now, but it's not a funny situation because it's actually quite sad. And again, we're setting them up for failure as opposed to a thriving opportunity. Now, with that said, yes, there have been wonderful individuals who've come here and they have done it and they've made a name for themselves and they've opened up businesses and they've given jobs. Again, I don't think you and I are saying...
We're not saying no immigration.
We're not painting everyone with the same brush here.
And nobody's saying don't have immigration.
Exactly.
It's the argument that I heard recently that I thought was truly one of the most cyclical arguments, and I think it was the federal government, but I'm not sure, essentially said, we need to bring more immigrants to be able to find workers who will build homes for the immigrants.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a second... That's not even making sense at that point.
It's not, but you know, at the same time, also you will have some of these immigrants, or I like calling them newcomers.
Newcomers,
sounds much nicer.
All right. Yeah, that's fine.
Newcomers come into this country, and they have such an appreciation. A lot of them, I know. There's also others that don't, but the ones that do come, their work ethic is pretty spectacular, and they will do more than a Canadian who's sitting here on his couch who's still getting CERB or something or some sort of unemployment, and they'll just ride that out. I think their work ethic is...
Well, do you remember John Mulwa? Do you remember the name John Mulwa? There was a lot written about him. I wrote about him. We had him on the show. Other people did too. He's a guy from Kenya who came here a few years ago, and earlier this year, the government was trying to kick him out.
Yes, I do. And he was a chef or something like
and,
that.
And there was, thankfully, a lot of people from the African community in this area rallied around him, and he got looked at a second time by the board, and they gave him a chance
reprieve.
To stay, a reprieve.
Yeah.
You know, he's a perfect example of someone who comes here. But even he, I don't think it's been easy for him.
It has not been easy.
I don't think it's been easy for him.
And again, I haven't lived there, so I don't know what it's like. yes, you're safe here. You would hope that you're going to be safe here.
Maybe.
You don't have to worry about shells and artillery left, right, and center coming over your head. You know you can sleep at night and not be bothered by that. But the question is, what are you going to be sleeping? I read an article about a family that's from Afghanistan in St. Catharines. They're happier here in their bed bug infested apartment than they are in Afghanistan. Well, wait a second here. How is that humanity, and how is that looking after each other?
Would we rather, and maybe this is unfair because maybe, again, your point, maybe people would say, I'd rather still come here nonetheless, but would we rather bring 500,000 people into the country that we can successfully help and navigate through the system, or 1 million where a high percentage or a reasonable percentage are really struggling because we can't do anything for them?
You know,
I don't know the answer, but I think I know the answer.
There's the human side. There's the financial side to it. There's the I'm glad I'm not in politics to make this decision, but there are some amazing individuals that are out there that should be here and deserve to be here. But, you know, we have to also look after ourselves in our backyard.
Mike, this is one of the most bizarre, hilarious. Well, this is hilarious in its own unfortunate way. But, you know, we have talked a lot in the media lately about artificial intelligence and where this is going and whether this is the future of humanity and all the rest. So last week, MSN.com has a travel section. And they posted an AI-generated article about the can't-miss attractions in Ottawa. Did you hear about this?
No, I did not.
So this is artificial. This is not humanly written. No human was investigating. This was AI scouring the internet to pull together what you cannot miss in Ottawa. So you've got, you know, you would think Parliament buildings and the Mint and Rideau Hall and maybe drive by Sussex Drive. And who knows, maybe, you know, the Byward Market or, you know.
You go in the winter, you got the canals, skiing,
whatever, all
that
stuff.
Winterfest, yeah.
Well, number three on the list was the Ottawa Food Bank.
The Ottawa Food Bank. Hey, good reason to go.
Here's what it wrote. The organization has been collecting, purchasing, producing, and delivering food to needy people and families in Ottawa since 1984. We observe how hunger impacts men, women, and children on a daily basis and how it may be a barrier to achievement. People who come to us have jobs and families to support, as well as expenses to pay. Life is already difficult enough. And you ready for the last line of this thing?
Yeah.
Consider going into it on an empty stomach.
Oh, my gosh. Hey.
This is it. Now, this page has disappeared.
Proof that you have to make sure you edit everything.
This is a very benign. I mean, it's a little, you know, ridiculous that it would say go to the food bank on an empty stomach. I mean, that's kind of
almost a slap in
objectionable.
The face.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, still, what an indictment of the whole AI. This is what we're going to have when we move towards let's get rid of people as much as we can and just get computers to do everything.
But this is a perfect sense right here. It just goes to show you why we are still needed and required so we can proof it properly and say, no, let's take this paragraph out completely. AI, it's a scary thing. Deep fakes, what's going to happen? I have yet to use ChatGPT or anything like that. Have you jumped into that world yet?
No, but I tried it once, and I can't remember what the what the word was or what the thing was I asked it to do. And it was, let me give you another example. So this one, and I knew this story, and I just looked up the, to make sure that I had not made this up in my mind or that it was a rumor.
What do you got?
So AI is not new. There have been versions of AI.
For years.
Of some kind. And so a number of places will have words that are not allowed. Some papers, newspapers or media will have words that we don't allow. So if it sees it, it'll automatically switch it to something else.
Okay.
Now there was a website, and I'm not sure what website it was, that had a ban on the word gay in the website.
Really?
Anyway, so unfortunately, when in London at the 2012 Olympics, a sprinter, Tyson Gay from the States.
Oh no.
Ended up, the AI automatically switched his name, so it appeared in the story as Tyson Homosexual.
Again.
Again, nobody looking, nobody checking, relying on technology. You don't need people to do this stuff, and you end up with, like, ludicrous, insane things.
Crazy stuff.
But this is where we're going. We've now got books being written by AI. We've got articles being, we've got work projects and presentations being completely done by AI.
Constantly on my phone, I'm getting updates and how AI can improve my life with Excel and PowerPoint, and it's never been easier. And I'm thinking, man, if this is the case, you know, we talk a lot about government at all three levels and the wasting of money and all that. Let AI do the marketing material all of a sudden, and you just have one person proof it.
Can you imagine if governments, well, maybe they do already.
I'm sure they probably have already started somehow.
I want to have the finance minister next time tell AI to do the budget and write the budget book and see what pops out. Now, I say that with my tongue firmly planted in my cheek because it would be disastrous, I'm quite sure. But yeah, it is. We need these reminders every once in a while. We need these ludicrous stories to remind us of where we're going.
Everything is still necessary to make sure that it's proofed, it's seen with a human eyeball. And I don't know how this is truly going to help the population as we continue to age and get to a point. I don't, you know, your kids, my kids, you know, is this really healthy for them? I don't know. I don't think so. You don't have to think as much on your feet. And that's a real drain on individuals and lives and the society, I think.
I just, where did I see this? I just saw a story today. I'm looking it up really quickly. The number of students, university students, who say they have seen someone cheat by using ChatGPT or some other AI or are doing it themselves is up to almost 50%.
Big number.
So and how long has that taken? Like for this thing, it's been less than a year. It's been
easily
6 months probably.
And we're so already how are professors going to try to go against this, and how do they kind of determine what is ChatGPT? Because what I've also heard is, you know, you can go into university, have ChatGPT do your assignment for you, and then if you're a smart student, you go in and then you kind of
change a few things.
You just touch it up a little bit. You put a little Mike-isms in it, for example, if I was doing it.
If I'm a professor, you said, how will professors deal with it? If I'm a professor and I've got a student in university, we're not talking elementary school or middle school. If I'm a professor in university and I've got a student who wants to do this, why do I care at this point? If you want to cheat and not learn anything, what do I care? Am I really supposed to spend all my time trying to track this down and find out if you're cheating?
But because the point is, in university, yes, you are learning stuff in university, and a lot of it you have to retain. But you also are learning the skills and how to get from letter A to Z, everything in between. And you're right, our kids' brains are just going to go, duh, at some point.
You know what they need to start doing? The one thing you could do, we got to go to the news here. You know what the one thing the teachers could do, or profs could do if they really want to, if they're so inclined, I think, is, you submit your paper, and a month or two later, on the spur of the moment, with no warning, just say, Mike, remember that paper you wrote about, the asexual reproduction of the common swamp amoeba?
Yeah.
When you talked about this and this, tell me again what you meant by that. I don't think it would take much. I always think that next time I get a chance to talk to them, remember that time the Prime Minister showed up at, I think, the University of Waterloo and gave a off-the-cuff explanation of quantum physics?
Yeah.
I want to just say, by the way, because I know he didn't just memorize that for that thing.
Of course,
by the way, can you explain quantum physics again to me?
I know where you're going with that. Yeah.
But you could do it if you're a prof. You just catch the students. And if I had written an essay, I would at least have remembered enough. I don't, not word for word, but I could muddle my way through trying to explain what I wrote.
And that's even part of it then, too. You're going to do it, at least read it, go over it, understand what AI gave you, and then maybe submit it. I don't know. So maybe this show will be AI one day.
Oh, don't say that out loud.
Sorry.
Don't say that out loud. Yes. Sorry. Welcome back to the AI show here on 9. I should do it with a more robotic voice.
And the only person working, it's going to be Tom or Ben behind the glass.
That's
just pushing buttons and putting in music.
Yeah. You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
All right. As I say, Mike Fortune from the Hamilton Network on Cable 14, host of that. Owner of the city's best hair.
Too
I will
kind.
Give him that as well.
You're too kind.
No. When you have hair like I do, and I see hair like you have, It's a chasmic gap.
There we go. Well, I appreciate it always. Thank you, my friend.
So people who were just listening to the news, you and I were sitting here when the news was on, and there was an item on there that I wanted to ask you about, and that is that there is a suggestion from Toronto that they want to bring in a municipal tax to help cover some of the costs because, you know, they're way behind. They're basically destitute almost. They and the federal government and the province have both said, yeah, we don't have endless more money for you. What do you think? Let's forget Toronto for a second. Let us imagine, and I really hope she's not listening and that we're not giving any ideas. If they ever do this, by the way, people, if anyone from the city of Hamilton ever does this, don't blame us. We're the messenger.
We're just the messenger here.
If Andrea Horvath, though, came up on Monday and said, our new plan is a municipal tax for Hamilton. It will keep your property taxes down by a couple percentage points, but you'll have to pay for stuff as you go along and buy anything in town. What would you say?
People will lose their minds. It's no different than what we talked about earlier about getting raises and all that stuff. People will lose their minds if you put another tax in place. Because as we know, once a tax is there, it's there for good. It's there for generations. And I don't think the city can handle that right now. I don't think any city can. At some point, the higher up governments, everything's getting downloaded to us. The federal government has to step up a little bit more, and they have to do something.
Perhaps, although...
Did they say what percentage, by the way, what the municipal tax was?
You know what? I haven't heard. I don't know if they've... I'll look it up. I don't know if they've said what percentage they're talking about.
You can't even say a 1% or a 0.5% because that means nothing. It's still going to be too much. It's the perception. It's what you are telling your citizens, saying, look, we can't afford anything, so we're going to make you pay more for it now. Good luck.
Well, and so Toronto is facing $46.5 billion in budget pressures over the next decade. So about $5 billion a year they're needing to find, and they're not getting it from anywhere. So I don't see anywhere that says what the percent.
So to your point earlier, Scott, instead of always saying spend, or make people spend more, why can't Mayor Chow and the rest of Toronto Council say, where can we cut? Where is there a lot of excess that we can, you know what, we can really truly do without?
I don't even know if you have to say excess. Because in your household, you were saying, you know, things are tight. Everyone's got things that are tightening up a little bit. It's not necessarily what's excess. It's what is not essential that we can...
Well, much better said. Yes. So that's why you're the host of the show.
Or in Hamilton, what is there? It may be a good program. It may be a helpful program. People may like the program. But you know what? It's not something that is a must-have. It's a want. It's not a need. But we never do this. And so now, you know, Olivia Chow and others in Toronto looking at the idea of, well, let's hit people with another tax. You know who gets walloped by this? And I say this every time.
The middle class.
Yes. But even more than that, retirees. Pensioners.
Fixed incomes. Yep.
Who many of them, you know, again, we're talking about property taxes going up. Many of the people in this city who are of a certain age bought their home 50 years ago, 60 years ago, and it might have been $18,000.
Yep.
And today it might be worth $800,000. And they're now paying taxes on an $800,000 home, but they weren't millionaires.
Nope.
They were hardworking middle class laborers, a lot of them. And now they're being expected to continue to find in their non-rising pension more and more and more money. We're taxing people out of their homes, literally.
And you will see people at some point just come in and throw their keys on the branch manager's desk and say, I'm out, can't do it anymore.
Well, I don't know if we'll see that here, but you will see a lot of for sale signs going up. Now,
but what you sell, where are you going to, though? Because you got to
buy something. Kids. I mean, really? Because you're right, you'd have to buy something else.
Do you imagine if you and Monica had to sell and move in with Victoria or Caleb at one point?
You know what? It's not me or Monica, my wife, that would have a problem with it, but the kids might be like talking to each other going, hey, it's your turn.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm using that as a tongue-in-cheek thing.
No, but it's true. It's true. It's, you know, there are cultures and countries where that's very commonplace.
Of course.
And that's fine, but that that traditionally is not our culture. It would be a real adjustment here if all of a sudden that becomes the norm, that everyone lives in the basement. I just can't. I would be fascinated at what the response would be in this city where council is already oftentimes
they're teetering,
spoken derisively to the extreme. If somebody said, "Let's bring another tax onto the people," there would be a pox on their house.
Yep.
Like you wouldn't believe, I think.
And the stress and the added, everything that is added to that 1% or 0.5% or whatever it's going to be, and maybe it's going to be some stupid high number, we don't know. It will just be too much, I think, for individuals. And, you know, you want to try to think out of the box, and it's so easy to say, well, just add a tax. But what this country is turning into, it's not a good thing right now. And where we are as a city, it's not a good thing right now. We're still fortunate, no doubt about it. But to your point, housing is not going to be a thing that people are able to strive for like we used to be able to.
Okay, here's my prediction, though. If Toronto brings in this municipal tax, if this goes through and they actually do it, I will right now on this day,
August 18th, 2017.
I will bet you money, and I don't bet, but I will bet you money if Toronto brings this in within a few years, Hamilton will, if not bring it in, and I won't bet that they'll bring it in, but it will be mentioned and pushed and debated on the council floor at Hamilton City Hall. Whether or not it gets defeated or not, I can't say. But it will be, somebody will bring the idea forward in Hamilton seriously to push it.
Hey, they might even bring it in the next week or two or the start of September. You never know. And I won't be surprised by that.
And you know what the excuse would be? The excuse will be that the province, by getting rid of development charges, has left the city now with a gap in money that they would have brought in of millions of dollars, and therefore we have no choice but to tax you.
Well, and we also saw too. We took a $9 million clawback on the health
dental
side of things.
Yeah, no.
So you know, there's always going to be an excuse as to why it needs to go in. I'd love to see an excuse for a change to say why we're cutting something that makes really good sense.
August the 18th, I'm telling you, if Toronto gets this through, it will be discussed seriously in Hamilton. And that's when, most people who oppose these kind of things don't go to council to raise a stink. People do go for certain things, but it's not usually the middle class who's going to. That's when you show up at city council for a meeting and sit in the stands and let them know. Anyway.
Stand your ground.
We'll see. We will see. But I just, you know what? It's almost predictable.
Like, what would the municipal tax be on? Like, Is it your property? You already have your property taxes. Like, what would they? Are they just throwing it in there just for like? What are you getting?
Well,
out
a
of
municipal
it?
Sales
or
tax,
or is it just to help pay off a debt?
No, it would go to city coffers. A municipal sales tax. I'm assuming anything purchased in the city pretty much would end up. It's like it would be like HST or GST or anything else. It would just be another.
So you go to a Max Convenience or a Circle K, whatever they're called now. You buy your Slurpee for $4 or whatever it is. You pay your tax, your HST, GST, and then you're going to pay a municipal tax on top of that too.
That would be presumably the...
Because it's in our city?
That would presumably it. It would almost be, if it wasn't so serious, it would almost be comical to see this come up for debate because of the response that I think it would generate. I don't think there would be a whole lot of people lining up supporting this.
And then do you think at some point the feds or the provincial governments would come in and say, no, you can't be doing that? Or do they even have any say in that? You imagine Doug Ford's response to that, hearing his good friend Olivia Chow has thrown this out there? It's going to be interesting times for sure. And we will.
And one more thing. And by the way, I just got a note from Danny.
Danny.
And he makes an excellent point, I want to say. Danny makes an excellent point that if the municipal sales tax ever comes in, whether it's in Toronto or Hamilton, but let's say in Hamilton, how many people all of a sudden drive out of Hamilton to purchase the stuff in St. Catharines or in Burlington or in Brantford or somewhere else to avoid the sales tax because it's close enough that you can go do your, I can go do my shopping just over the border in a different city and not have to pay it. I bet you that would happen instantly.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But then, you know, I've always, and Danny, great point. Love it. But then I'm always one of those individuals. I'll look, well, if I look at my time and the traffic and the gas, you know, it's just easier to spend the extra couple bucks here.
All right, what if you're buying furniture, or what if it's a big expense?
Yeah, well, different story. We always do a shop around. And
that's
all
right.
That,
but
sure.
If all of a sudden, okay, so yeah, you're not going to go buy your 7-Eleven Slurpee over the border.
Right.
But anything significant, now you're cutting into the businesses in town because people will, I believe, go outside if you were
but
to try
so
to
much
do this.
But isn't so much of that already happening with online stuff, Amazon and so on and so forth? You're
that would be fascinating. I don't know the answer. And by the way, that's something to look up here. Yeah. I don't know. So I wonder if the municipal tax would be in effect if you purchase something online from
and
elsewhere.
It comes up Hamilton and your postal code. Oh, we got to throw in a municipal tax that too.
I wonder. There is a point. There is a point at which people will rebel, and I don't. I'm not talking violent overthrow of the government. I don't mean that stuff at all. There is a point at which I don't know what they do, but that people will finally just say enough is enough. I don't know what it is.
Okay, enough is enough. But what do they? What you can say that they'll say enough is enough. But at the end of the day, what do you do? Do you stop paying bills?
It's an excellent question. Whether people refuse to pay taxes or whether people who don't normally get involved. Get involved.
So the silent majority.
And begin campaigning against particular candidates who feel like, well, no one's really going to rise up and, you know, organize a vote against me or whatever. People will find something at a certain point. You will make it so that people become desperate because they can't afford the bills that you are tagging them with.
Yeah.
I would suggest that a municipal tax would.
That would almost put a nail in a coffin.
Well, it would
be pretty darn close.
It would be something.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm just swallowing here because we're chewing on some delightful snacks that producer Ben's fiance brought in. So if you hear saliva dripping onto the microphone, that's why.
I'm going in for number two here. Ben and Kayla came in, and they're just amazing individuals. And Kayla just, what are these, little date squares or something? What are these called?
Lemon bars.
They are just absolutely spectacular. She's a heck of a person.
Beautiful. All right, Mike. So.
Yeah. Keep talking. I'm going to eat.
So has your daughter yet put the full court press on you to find her a pair of Taylor Swift tickets when she comes to Toronto in, like, what is it, 7 years from now? I think it's next year. Sorry.
So the full court press has not happened. She's not a Swiftie, but she has lots of friends who are Swifties. And I do know, see, I can't even talk about it on radio in case she's listening. And I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
But I am aware of lots of people that are trying to get tickets.
So here's the question. How much, as a good dad, as a dad who loves his daughter and wants her to be happy, let's say she was a Swiftie for a minute. This was the biggest thing that could ever come. How much would you spend for a pair of Taylor Swift tickets to get her to the concert? What would be your
cap? For a pair of tickets? Well, or her and a friend?
Well, sure. How much are you willing to put out there to make sure that she is happy and gets to see this concert?
I would go no higher than $500.
For the pair?
No, for one.
For one.
So $1,000.
All right. That might get you into the porta potty outside the stadium these days. There are reports that resale tickets are now going for $20,000.
Tens of thousands.
$10,000, $20,000 a piece.
And these are people not even living in the GTHA area. They're coming from Vancouver, for crying out loud.
I said this on the air before, and so I apologize for being repetitive. If they could resuscitate John Lennon and George Harrison and bring the Beatles back, I might pay $10,000. I'm not paying $20,000 to see anybody play a con. Maybe it's a stupid question. Who has the money to do this?
Corporations. They buy them all.
They can't. There's 300,000 seats that are going to be sold for this thing. It can't all be corporate.
No, they can't all be, but they play a big role in it, I believe. And then, of course, you have your 1% of income earners that are just sky high. They'll get their tickets. And then us, the lonely minions, we get the scraps.
I'm blown away by this, A, because I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. I don't dislike Taylor Swift. I got no beef with Taylor Swift.
I look at you and I see Swifty all
over
you.
Yeah, that's right.
You caught me off guard there, Scott. Okay.
I got no beef with her. I can't fathom who would pay that much to see someone sing a concert. Now, maybe if you said, you know, this includes dinner with her afterwards and, you know,
a meet and greet or something. But no, she, I guess Taylor Swift doesn't do that. She has to save her voice.
Yeah, but to sit hundreds of yards, meters away, and that somehow is worth thousands of dollars, it is totally befuddling to
Rogers
me.
Center, Taylor Swift sitting in the 500 level, and you've probably paid a few grand for that. Can you imagine that view? Like, come on, really?
What's I sat up there to go see U2 the last time they came through.
And but how was that view? Were they like little ants running around?
Pretty
on
much.
A,
yeah. Pretty much. And but I tell you, I didn't pay thousands of dollars. Each ticket was probably about $80.
Well, you know, this should be some good news though for Mayor Chow, who wants to put a municipal tax.
Oh yeah, she
on.
Could settle the whole budget.
She could settle the whole budget just with this alone. But the economic impact that Taylor Swift is going to bring to this region apparently is just astronomical.
Yeah.
I heard a billion with a B. That's pretty impressive when it comes to people being able to work, merch being sold, hotels, tourism, food. Like, it hopefully it will help out for the better for everybody.
What is there something that you have ever, not this, but is there something that you can point to that as a father you have done that your kid really wanted to do and you've gone hog wild to try and make it happen? Is there one like that? I'll tell you what you're thinking
know.
About it.
I don't think there is.
Because my this one, well, no, it's not mine.
Okay.
It's my dad.
Yeah.
So my dad was not, I'm pretty sure that up until 1984, my dad had never heard a Michael Jackson song in his life.
Okay.
And my sister was a huge Michael Jackson fan during the Thriller thing. And so when the Victory Tour rolled into Toronto, my dad was under enormous pressure from my sister to get tickets to the concert and somehow landed a pair in like the 20th row at Exhibition Stadium.
That was old school. Did he go and stand
in line
overnight?
I think he did. Or he, I don't know, however, but he got these really good tickets. But my sister was probably only about 8 or 9 at the time. So there's no way he's letting her go down with a friend. So my dad, the non-Michael Jackson fan, is standing in the 20th row with 50 or 60 or 80,000 Michael Jackson fans.
Did he at least learn the moonwalk while he was there?
I am very positive. No, that was not the case. But
so I did think about, if it wasn't concert related, but I know we had to search heaven and earth for a PS5 for my son.
All right, so you did.
And we did get one. My wife's side, she has plenty of girlfriends that don't have kids, so they look at our kids as their kids. So they put in 20 email addresses and do whatever they have to. But
yeah, they the people in the American Walmarts fist fighting over the PS5
boxes?
Pretty much.
Yeah. But yeah, you know,
and the Tickle Me Elmo.
You got all these tickets being sold for Taylor Swift, but again, all the pomp and circumstance. Yeah, it's all there. But the old days of having to stand in line, spend the night, you know, a block, two blocks of people waiting. That's what concerts used to be and should be like. This online stuff nowadays, get a code, wait and see. Who knows? It's like, come on.
And really, and again, not to be totally like party pooper central, but
old.
5 years from now, will it matter at all? Will you remember this? It's not like this is the only concert tour she's ever done. She's been by here multiple times. I a few years ago when Adele was the current Taylor Swift, I got my wife and daughter, I didn't have to go to much work, but I got them tickets to go see Adele when she came to Toronto. And it was supposed to be the biggest thing ever. And they had a great time, but I don't think that they've probably either mentioned it
talked
in the last
about it
3 years.
Since.
It's not like this is going to be a life-changing event for people.
No, it's
renovate your bathroom and use the $40,000 for a pair.
And I'm sure there's lots of parents that are probably struggling with this. Well,
sure,
we can get you the tickets, but what are we going to do without?
Okay, so what do
want
we do
over a need?
So your daughter has three friends, and their parents get them tickets to Taylor Swift. What kind of pressure are you under, or how bad a parent are you? And I don't think you are, but if all of a sudden she's the one who's not going
again, because she's not a big Swiftie fan.
I'm talking theoretically.
Theoretically, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I don't. I would just lay it out. Taylor Swift or volleyball? What do you want to do more? Swifties one night, volleyball's the whole season.
I'll tell you another one. So my dad had a friend who had Leaf season tickets, really good season tickets, front row gold season tickets, a lawyer friend whose law firm had these.
See, lawyer, law firm, corporate.
Yeah, it's true. But every year before the season, This was one of my dad's very best friends. The guy said, you can pick any game you want to go to. My dad bought them from him. He didn't get them, but he bought them. Yeah. They were like $35 at the time, not what, $800 or whatever now.
Yeah.
And so one year, 1982, so in the fall of 81, the game that I picked to go to was January 16, 1982, the one time the Edmonton Oilers came to town when Gretzky was on his way to setting a points record.
There you go.
And we're walking up, and it was amazing that he got these tickets, but we're walking up College Street. I went to Maple Leaf Gardens once upon a time, and the scalpers are all stopping us. And
who's buying? Who's selling? Who needs them?
And so my dad, just for fun, says, well, what do you give us for these? And he showed two front row golds.
Yeah.
And in 1982, for Gretzky, it was his one visit of the year, the guy offered us 400 each.
Wow. 800 bucks.
Which was a lot of money.
A lot of coin back then.
And my dad turned to me and he goes, we can go to the game. I'm happy to go to the game.
Yeah.
Or we can sell these and you can keep your 400 and I'll keep my 400 and we'll go watch it on TV across the store. What do you mean, what did I do? I said, we're going to the game.
Okay, just, hey.
I'm going to
say I was waiting for that finish. I'm like, he had to have taken the money.
No way. I went to see Wayne. It's the one time I got to see Wayne Gretzky play live.
So there you go.
And that I do remember.
You are talking because you're a huge hockey fan.
That I do remember.
So you know what? Perhaps they're of the 50, 60,000 and so people that are going to be there, they're going to have those memories.
The Oilers lost 8-1. Wayne Gretzky was stopped on a penalty shot by Bunny LaRocque.
And you had hair.
I had hair, and I was wearing a tie because it was front row gold at Maple Leaf Gardens once upon a time. Yes,
that's right. Yeah, good times, man.
There you go. So if you're a parent looking for Taylor Swift tickets,
get a second mortgage.
Yeah, I don't know if I just, by telling that story, if I just made you feel worse that your kid will remember this forever and you must do it or not.
You must do it.
Anyway.
What kind of parent are you?
Exactly.
No, I'm just, it's, you got to stay within your means if you can do it and cut something out if you do decide to go with it if it's going to be tight.
Last night, the hometown Ticats took on the heretofore winless Edmonton Elks, the benevolent order of elk.
The laughing stock of the league.
And I asked people to send in a word to describe it. This is not one word. I'll go with wet the bed.
Yeah.
It was very wet, but it was not for that reason. Some of the words that we've been sent, apoplectic is from Paul. Paul said apoplectic.
There's no way he just came up with that off the top of his head.
Oh, no, Paul.
Paul, you Googled that.
Nah,
you had to Google that, Paul. Come on, be honest.
Let's see here. Who is this one? I'm not sure who this is from. It says disheartening. That is, yes. Here's the one that I can't say on the radio. Let's go with feces-tacular.
Okay.
But the first word was not feces.
Fair enough.
It's like a creek that was involved with a...
There's a TV show out there.
Yeah.
You're allowed to say that in regards to the show, aren't you?
Oh, probably.
I think you can. There's a TV show out there called.
Yeah. Hammered Cats. There's one that we got. Let's see. Unhinged. There's a good word for it.
Deplorable, gruesome. You can throw at anything you
catastrophic,
want.
Catastrophic, Mondu said. This one from... Paul, I think, and Paul and Heather, sinking like a sunset. Not one word, but that's very well said.
That very poetic. It's got a nice look to it.
Very poetic.
And I'm wondering, of all these people, like, I'm throwing out my words. I only watched the first half. Like, I didn't even watch the full game. It was that bad.
Well, okay, so I assume most people know what happened. At the halftime...
A monsoon came in.
Yes.
Lightning, thunder, it was crazy.
It was tropical. It was tropical rainforest stuff.
90 minutes.
And it was coming down. And that bought a lot of people freedom and relief because they got to leave the stadium and didn't have to stick around for the pain at the end.
But guess what? They were allowed back in if they wanted to, I heard.
Well...
Who would have gone back?
Yeah, you know what? It's anyway.
So how do we fix this, Scott? How do we fix the Hamilton Tiger Cats?
All right,
serious about playing in the Grey Cup this year.
Okay, really? Listen,
they're only 3-6.
They are 3-6.
We
however,
have seen sub 500 teams win a Grey Cup.
Yes, and to your point, and truly, yes, they could. All of a sudden, turn a corner, and in the CFL, you get into the playoffs, and you get hot at the right time. You could do it.
Anything happens.
But there has been nothing.
Zero.
This year that would suggest that this team is about to turn a corner and suddenly become a powerhouse. There has been no evidence. It could happen, but to this point, there has been no... There. Right now, I would say the Ty Cats' chances of turning a corner and becoming great are the same as me having an afro by tomorrow.
If you were a quarterback and followed the Hamilton Tiger Cats at any point, would you even want to suit up? Because they
yes.
have an
yes.
But you don't have. You're not going to get protected. You don't have an O-line.
Yeah, but you always believe that you're the guy who can make the difference.
Geez.
So, but here's where things really become difficult for the Tie Cats. And you know, as if it wasn't already that you're hosting the Grey Cup, and it right now is not looking like you have any realistic chance of playing in it. But
nope.
Next week, BC playing very well this year. The week after, the Argos,
and
best team in the league.
Before you get going there, that's when the season really starts.
Yes.
Labor Day is when the season starts. This is all preseason.
It's true. No, it's not. You're not wrong. Again, there's no evidence that something good is about to happen. Maybe it can.
You pull out a win against BC, hypothetically. All
yes.
of a sudden, you're 4-6. You go into that big game against Toronto,
Labor
which
Day.
Hamilton always gets pumped up for. You could be 5-6. You could be. And then don't you play Ottawa after
then
that?
Then you play Ottawa. That game is going to be enormous. Then you got Winnipeg, who, well, they're, but still. And then Toronto again. You, realistically, based on the way the Ticats are playing right now, there's one game in there, Ottawa.
One winnable.
That
potential
looks winnable.
Yeah.
Stuff happens. But it's bleak. I'll tell you why it's so bleak. And I think most Ticat fans listening would probably share this. It's been 1999.
And Darren Flutie.
It's 1999 since they last won. Every other team has had their celebrations. Every other team has found a way to do it somehow.
Yep.
And you've got two out of three Grey Cups at home. The first one you lose in overtime. That was very painful. But this one...
Well, and look at all the past Grey Cups that they lost with the flag.
I know.
But, you know, pushing from behind and all that. So I don't know if there's a curse, if there's a hex, if Harold Ballard has just finally looked down at us and said, guess what, Hamilton, you're never getting nice things again. I don't know. But something has to be done, and I... You know, does it start with the coach? And at this point, do you get rid of Coach O, or is it too late for that? The lack of discipline.
I think it's too late this season.
The lack of discipline is what really irks me. You get outplayed, okay, that's fine. But when you start giving up yards and misconduct penalties and roughing the passer and pass interference stuff, that's what really gets me, because that's what drags a team down as well.
And how? Well, yes, I agree with you. And the other half of that would be, it doesn't appear, and appearances, you know, can be deceiving. Sorry for the cliche. It doesn't appear like there's this immense amount of urgency, or they come out flat most games. Yesterday, they got, what was it, 1 point they scored in the second half?
Yeah.
In a game.
Well, I don't know.
The,
I didn't watch the second
half. No, but in
half.
The game
in
the, against the worst
score.
Team in the league.
Yeah.
And you've still got a chance.
You missed an extra point. You miss a field goal.
You leave multiple field goals.
You leave 4 points there minimum in the first half.
I don't know.
It was just an absolute debacle. Their secondary, why do they play so soft in their secondary? Why can't they get up and tackle better even? There's a lot of pomp and circumstance, and look at me and look at my number, and I'm going to celebrate when I just don't see them playing football. And I know that's harsh and...
Well, let's.
I'll never
this.
Be invited to the Ticat dressing room, but that's fine.
Let's say this: the MVP of last night's game, Rick Zamperin, who sat through the rain delay, sat through the second half, did a fifth quarter until I don't know what hour, and then was here to do his show at 5:30 in the morning. If every Ticat put in the effort that Rick Zamperin did covering the team,
we'd be 9-0 right now.
10-0.
Are we 3-7 now?
Well,
3-6. 10-0.
3-6. You're okay. 9-0.
9-0. 9-0.
Yeah. 9-0. You know what I'm getting at.
I know what you mean, Scotty. But yeah, it's
bleak. It's just, you know, touch wood, touch veneer. I'm touching veneer right now. That something clicks. That something, because I think they have talent. I still do. I still think they have talent. That something gets going. But
why isn't it not being harnessed?
Well, that's the question. And right now it just isn't. And it's just it's not good. But
And you know, we listen to the post game and the pre game and the after practices and after the walkthroughs. And again, I know you can't bark at players like you used to, but I don't see players being held accountable for anything.
the biggest problem for me with this, or the biggest disappointment maybe, is we saw 2 years ago how impactful it was in this city to have the home team in the home Grey Cup.
And that was with COVID restrictions.
That was, but with, having Hamilton playing in that home game was an enormous
huge.
Boost. And you just were hoping that you get to have that again. And, you know, again, I'm not going to say it can't happen, because it absolutely can happen. I just don't see anything right now that points me towards believing that it will happen.
Well, you know, number 21 there on the defense, he sure loves to talk on social media and get out there in the community. And I think that's all wonderful. But as a leader of this team, you know, maybe you take everyone by the shoulder pads and you look everyone in the eye and say, okay, we got to turn this around now. Enough is enough.
Enough is enough. You know what? They're always looking for new merch. There's the T-shirts now. Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
I don't know that they'll be selling those at the Ticat store.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.